Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, no more nasty things about your teammates now. We're recording.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Here for the first of two podcasts this week, because we have got not just incredible domestic rugby to talk about, but internationals as well. The autumn series has begun. We're in the rugby dungeon. I'm Tim, that's JB.
Hello, Tim.
And that's Phil.
Happy Halloween, Tim.
Of course, it's Halloween, isn't it?
What a setup JB's got out the front of his house. Carving pumpkins today, JB?
I did one, yeah. I was disappointed because the pumpkins arrived and they've sat on the side in the kitchen since Thursday. No one's bothered carving them. And then 5 minutes before the girls are about to go trick-or-treating, it's like, oh, you're going to carve the pumpkins? Like, well, with what? Like, scalpels or the markers so I can mark them up? You know, they've been here since Thursday, and no one's done anything with them. So I quickly did one, and the rest of them have gone out with stickers on their face.
Oh, so it was the only one that's carved yours?
Yeah.
The one with spewing
its internals.
Spewing internal. That's very impressive.
Is that a self-portrait? I've seen you in that position a few times.
Yes. It could well have been, actually, from earlier on in the week.
I was never into Halloween as a kid. I think mainly because I lived in an area where...
You're Mormon, weren't you?
I lived in an area where, basically, I'd sort of scare old ladies if me and my mates used to knock on their door, whereas everyone around here actually gets into it.
Mm. Yeah, it's really nice, actually, because you get to meet, you know, all of the neighbours and they bring their kids around. It's actually, I think...
Have a little look in their house.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, nice. Someone's doing all right for themselves. yeah, it is nice, you know, because you don't get to see your neighbours enough. And people knock Halloween. I think it's actually one of the nice ones because they actually come over your house and you can give them some sweets and whatnot.
And also, when the kids are younger, like mine are old enough now that they don't want us to go with them. But when we used to go along, what we used to do is take... in fact, it got to the point where one of our friends took a cart with drinks and the adults would have drinks on the way around while the kids were getting sweets. It was good.
Nice.
That is nice.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah, it wasn't really a thing when I was growing up, but I'm quite accepting of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Definitely.
Which way do you want to go on this podcast? We've got a fork in the road right here. We've got two directions we can go down. There's a big, shiny, wonderful... bright lights of the autumn internationals.
Couldn't care less. Couldn't care less. Let's talk about local rugby.
All right, first podcast. Okay, so we'll have two podcasts anyway, so, you know, click on the other one if you're desperate to hear about the internationals first.
Yeah, you come for England, but you stay for the Broughton Park Manchester chat.
Oh, JB and I played on the field together. We rekindled the magic that we've seen many times in the past.
Did you play it? Was it at Manchester?
At Manchester.
At Manchester.
Nice place Broughton to play Park. Rugby.
It is. Yeah. It's a lovely club, Manchester. Yeah. There were three Broughton Park teams. The threes, which kicked off at two. The twos were there, Broughton Park twos. And also the first team were there. So all three teams in action. We got to kick off at 2 o'clock. Which means we got to watch the first team as well.
Awesome.
Which is brilliant. I think more teams should do that. I think because we had a situation at Talk H a few weeks ago. The reason I was there is because Talk H were not playing. But we had a situation at Talk H where the first team finished an hour before the third team. So we just got our beers and dragged them all outside in our underwear and our towels from the shower. And we watched the third team and it's absolutely brilliant. Definitely more staggered kickoffs.
I agree with that. I really do. Also, JB sort of said, oh, I really want a game today. Do you reckon you need any bodies? I went, oh, yeah, just come along. But I didn't tell anyone. All I said to the skipper is, I've got another player coming along. I didn't say who. I didn't want to ruin that surprise.
And it was a surprise.
And as he was running over, people went, is that JB? Is that Beardmore? Yeah, that's the player I'm bringing up.
It was a big day for some of those boys.
when did you last play for BP?
I played every year since I've left.
Because you played...
We played in the Vets together.
And last year I played...
A couple of times.
Definitely a second team. Maybe I didn't because of COVID. No, I'm sure I did. Definitely in Vets. Definitely in the second team for them. Not been obviously first since I've left the club, but yeah, I'm always round thereabouts, and I'll always watch if there's nothing on in Talk H.
Well, I went to watch a bit of local rugby this weekend. Me and Rob Largan.
Yep, MP Rob Largan.
MP.
He was invited by Rob, the president of Glossop Rugby Club, which is a local club, to the pre-match dinner.
Who was more famous, there, you or?
In rugby circles, it's probably it's you, Phil, isn't it?
That's why I asked you to go. Isn't it? Win some votes.
It was a really good game, Penrith versus Glossop. First time Glossop ever played Penrith, so I'm told.
Mm-hmm.
And they won handily in the end. It was a massive comeback in the second half from Glossop.
Yeah, so Glossop are always a pretty physical team. I've played them a few times when I was at Broughton Park. So if you don't know your Northwest One rugby, yeah, Northwest One. Glossop, Penrith, Broughton Park, Manchester, all in the same league, so all this stuff matters. Played Penrith a few times. I've never won up there. Beat them down at Broughton Park.
Tough place to go.
Don't think they've ever lost to Glossop. But they're always physical.
I like
tough.
That pitch up on the hill. Up on the.
It's bloody cold up
it's
there.
It's cold up there.
It's bloody cold. If you catch it on the wrong night. Yeah.
But, so we did a bit, and I just echo it again, what we say many times, but if you're at a loose end and you just want somewhere to watch the internationals even, get down to your local rugby club. It's
I've got
great
to say,
crack.
That Broughton Park Manchester game, that I think there's a sort of sweet spot in rugby where you see proper rugby. It was proper structured. It was great to watch. I thought some of the stuff Manchester played was superb. And I thought the Broughton Park set piece was absolutely superb. So it was a nice juxtaposition. So well organised, but it doesn't have that grindingness of, say, the Premiership or the Championship. So it's fairly open.
And you can just stroll in.
Have a few beers. It's bloody good to watch.
You can normally get a pint for somewhere between £3 and £4 in these places.
So get to your local rugby club. And, you know, I can't just end without saying JB and I did combine for a magical moment.
Try.
I mean, on the other podcast, we'll talk about Severi Reese's try. The try we combined for was comparable.
It was, actually. It was very similar.
Do you want me to briefly describe it?
Yeah, yes, please. Absolutely. And then describe it in more detail later.
Kick off. I caught the ball just inside the 22.
Yeah.
I shaped to kick, but dummied the kick, stepped the guy that was coming to tackle me.
Nice.
Fed to a player who made a little break. I took the ball back inside. JB was right on my shoulder. I cut a little into our overs. JB hit a real hard unders line.
Standard.
Nice.
And
we've all seen that before.
And just and so as I was drifting them to the right, JB just jammed to the left. I lifted and he absolutely exploded from about 35 out.
About that. And then I tried to swan dive in. It was bad.
Yeah, and he did. He tried to swan dive. And basically, I looked up the field about a good 30 seconds later and the referee was still trying to flatten the divot.
It wasn't good. But I just slid in on this wet pitch. It wasn't that wet. Do you know when the footballers do the Klinsmann and they just stop dead?
Yeah.
It was going to be like that, but I saved it. Thank God.
You saved it. You look good.
Yeah. And hopefully get well soon to two Manchester players that got injured. We had two bad injuries. I am sure the lower level of rugby that you play, not the lower down the leagues, so lower level, twos, threes, so on and so forth, the injuries get worse. I am absolutely certain of it, because just people, there's just more accidental collisions and awkward knocks and...
People aren't as well conditioned as well.
Yeah.
Reflexes aren't sharp.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas in the first team game, far more collisions, far bigger collisions, but from what I could tell, thankfully, no big injuries. We had two real nasty ones, so...
Get well soon, those guys.
Yes, get well soon, guys.
So, domestic rugby-wise, firstly, before we get into the games... No. Let's start the same way we started last week, but a reversal, because we gave Worcester an absolute roasting last week.
Didn't we just? So, there could be...
And rightly so last week.
Yeah, rightly so last week.
And there could be a few things going on at Worcester, you know. There could be some reasons why players feel they need to pull up their socks. Because I think things all change on there dramatically.
Well, let's just address that, because that was the other place I was potentially going to start. There are rumours of a diamond return to the Premiership. Linked with Bath.
Yep.
Linked with Worcester.
on a short term, potentially on a longer term. I know that at one point he was looking to purchase a Premiership club with a consortium.
Yeah.
But he also would be a good interim or new director of rugby.
Well.
Or consultant. Or
something's going wrong at Worcester. I mean, what's gone wrong at Worcester, let's address what they did this weekend. Because it is one hell of an effort to pick yourself up off the canvas like they did. They had two games back-to-back where they looked awful. Absolutely dreadful. Northampton won, and then... Oh, was it Northampton last week?
Northampton was last week.
What was the one before that?
Was it Saracens?
I can't remember.
I think it was a 60-point loss against Saracens.
It was devastating. So you've got to give them all the credit in the world for actually picking it up and doing something good. On the other hand, though, Sale did some unacceptable things. And this is really... I'm starting to get worried for Sale now.
I am. We both picked them as Premiership champions this year.
Yep.
They're in 11th.
Topping the table with two...
They're in 11th.
And I said they wouldn't make top four, which... They still can make top four, but it's getting harder.
It's getting much harder.
Losing games like that away at Worcester, which most teams will pick up 4 or 5 points from that game.
Yeah, and that's literally the attitude of some of the players, which is you lose games like that, and that is your top four gone. You need to win those games.
Yeah.
So it's very worrying, and we'll come back to Sale later because I've got lots of thoughts on that. For Worcester, though, it's a brilliant win. Some of their rugby was outstanding. Some of their strike moves were really, really sharp.
And the two players... So I've only seen the highlights. I've not seen the full game. But the two players who really stood out were Shilcock,
100%.
Who looked amazing. Scored two tries and set up at least one of Van der Merwe's. And obviously, Van der Merwe, you give him... Well, give him an inch and he will finish tries for fun. He's so fast and so powerful.
Yeah, yeah. Shilcock's one of those players that has struggled for form for a couple of years, I'd say. I know this because we used to pick him up on Fantasy Rugby Draft, and he was always good. He was always good value. But since then, he's just kind of gone into his shell a bit. Well, I thought, I actually agree with you. Very, very good.
Those two, and having their two England boys, although they're not in the squad at the moment, so having Lawrence available, combining nicely with Venter in the centres, but also getting Hill back from his suspension.
Yeah,
for that red card offence.
Venter played very, very well. He's an absolute weapon.
Venter played well. Hill is so important as a leader. But he's such a big, strong boy and works so hard.
But they completely outplayed Sale. They completely outplayed them. Out wide, Sale made some horrendous tackling mistakes.
That's what it looked like. So I noticed that Byron McGuigan, who I complimented very highly a few weeks ago when Sale played against Quinns, when Sale shut down Quinns, his reading of the game out wide was awesome. And in this game, obviously, Solomon played for the first 30 minutes or so.
Yep.
Then Reed came on, Yard on the other wing. But Worcester just seemed like they were finding so much space out there.
Yeah, and the problem is with that, Byron gives them real good, solid defensive stability.
Yep.
So he reads game. If you look at the players he's played against this season, and there's some great names, and they didn't do much. Yard, Solomona, Reed, they're all flair players. They're guys that are exciting. So you get two of those on either wing, and yeah, you do tend to get a little bit more suspect defence, and it's a price that you pay. Sanderson's trying to rotate this team. Not only is he trying to rotate the team, he's also plugging in players now as replacements for internationals, and obviously AJ was on the bench, but he'll be off to USA duty or whatever he's up to. So they're trying to go down the squad as far as they can. The squad isn't yet strong enough, in my opinion. I thought Gus Ward did okay. I'm pretty sure at this point. I mean, what do you say about Rob Dupreer? He is a good fly half, but maybe not AJ. And I don't think he's probably as effective as Wilkinson at this point.
We shouldn't. You're right. They're into the third or fourth choice in several positions, partly by. Because they don't have any other option, and in some cases in recent weeks it's looked like that it's by design, which I find
baffling. Yeah, agreed. And the point is they chose to do this, right? So there is two portions of blame here. There's blame for the players that were on the field who made the terrible defensive reads. You might also say that there's a bit of blame on the rotational policy. You know, so someone like Byron McGuigan was fully fit, he could have played. He didn't play. You know, and where did they concede tries? So there is blame on both sides. You could also counter that with saying if Sale are serious about being a top four side, they need to be winning games like that down the league with lesser sides.
If it was... again, we've got Premiership Cup coming up, so there is an opportunity to rest players, which is why... Would you regard that as hubris in some respect? Almost... I understand it might be part of a bigger plan, but it just seems unnecessary. Seems unnecessary. And the thing we say about the Premiership, and we gave Worcester a hard time last week, rightly so, as you pointed out. But the one thing you can say about the Premiership is any team is capable of beating any other team. So if you have great players available, and you decide not to because you're playing Worcester or because there's some other bigger plan going on, then that's hubris, and that's going to bite you in the backside.
Yeah, I think there's an irony going on in the Premiership, which was when all the big clubs decided, right, we need to cut player salaries right now in COVID by 25%. They're going to get cut. We're going to reduce the salary cap also by 25%. The bigger clubs made a rod for their own back because all of a sudden everybody can fill their salary cap now. I'm not sure if Worcester are spending to the salary cap, but they've got some big names. It is competitive from the top right to the bottom. And I think you can see the teams that used to be able to compete with a team deep within their squad, like Exeter, are struggling because they can't rotate as much. Sale are now struggling because they can't rotate as much. Everyone is now really, really good. And when you do see massive losses, it's not because it's a bad team necessarily. Worcester, in some cases, you might make that argument, certainly not this week. It's because the styles don't match up.
Mm-hmm.
That is why teams are getting absolutely pounded, because the styles or the coaching decisions haven't been the right ones. So yeah, you can't go deep into your squad in the Premiership. You need basically your strongest team every single game.
You need to be as close to, and it is only the best teams who can go deep into their squad,
particularly on international weekends. Particularly when you've lost your international players, you need to pick your strongest squad then.
Alan Gibbon said he'll have been loving this chat. Clearly a Worcester fan. Yeah, and he's emailed us, contacteggchasers@gmail.com. Said, JB, those Worcester boys look pretty happy for Van der Merwe. Where did you get the info that, quote, cheap players were unhappy?
I never said that. I said I'd be unhappy if I wasn't getting paid much.
Yes.
And the guy outside me was on 400k.
And then he said, chin up, long way to go for Sale to make the playoffs. Regardless, every club needs a JB.
Well, that's interesting, because where would they get them from? They're fairly unique. It's not like they grow on trees.
You're quite right.
Yeah.
There was a couple. Let's talk about some of the really spicy games this weekend. In fact, let's talk about the game we saw today.
Oh, what a great game.
So, it was a stuttering start, I felt. The first half, with the exception of the tries.
Quinn Saracens, if you're not familiar with what we're talking about.
First half, with the exception of the tries, was a bit stop-start. But what a finish. And Saracens just look so ominous when they're in that position. Almost. So they had a weaker squad than normal. They lose a lot of players to England, obviously. And they're quite deep into some positions. But they still look very good, and Quinn's were impressive, particularly because they lose arguably their two most important players, or three if you count Marchant in there as well, but they lose Smith and Dom Brandt, who are their two most important players, with the
along
exception
with
of Kerr
and Esthazen.
Esthazen. But then they lose Tommaso Allan, who took a knock first play of the game. Takes another knock 20 minutes later.
Still manages to.
And Edwards, come on.
But half concussed, still manages to chuck a couple of absolute
worldies
of passes.
That pass for the. Caden Murley.
Thank God Murley finished that off, by the way.
Yeah,
if not,
he had three men inside him.
I'd terminate his contract there. I'd pull him off the field and terminate his contract. Rip it up in front of him as he walked off.
Oh, that pass, that was beautiful.
But for them to have that level of disruption, but still play as well as they did for large parts of the game, but they just got suffocated by that Saracens team, didn't they?
Yeah, I thought the weird thing about this game was how Harlequins took it to Saracens physically in the first 10 minutes. So that's his odd try. The Harlequins are running over Saracens for fun.
Well, Esterhazy runs over Billy Vunipola.
Yeah, yes, he does.
Billy goes too high.
Yes.
Big statement play.
I mean, yeah. He's in South Africa or in England. How are they not? How do they not need Andre Esterhazy?
D'Yolande.
Yeah, I know, but still. I mean,
there's world class and there's world class, isn't there?
I mean, if Todd Blackadder watched every one of Bath's games on DVD from the last 4 years before he joined Bath, I'm sure Razzie Erasmus has watched a game.
Oh, wait, that's got to be a lie, that story. That has to be a lie. From what I understand, that just can't be a thing that
from
happened.
From what I've seen, yeah.
Yeah, Tomas Samalen did a wonderful job at filling in for...
His opposite number did a better job at filling in for Owen Farrell, though.
Well, yes.
And it's the second game of the season that Alex Lazowski has... had an enormous part to play in. I think it was in the Bristol game.
Yeah,
he was massively influential in that and got the winning moment.
Yeah, I just love these times when, you know, you've got a guy playing well. So we know Tomas Allen, whatever his name is a good player because we've seen him. He started at the start of the season. We know he's good. We know he's a really good fill-in for Smith. I love it when you see someone else walk on. Who was that? Was it Evans?
Will Edwards.
Will Edwards comes on smiling, can't believe his luck. I mean, obviously he's Mexican cast, but he's like, yeah, who cares? Let's go for it. And he played so well. You know, he wasn't far off from leading his team to a win over the course of 60 minutes. I love those stories. Absolutely love them.
Yeah, he did play really well. But unfortunately, Saracens had a bit more off the bench, a bit more all round, and then it was Lewington... to Jackson Ray.
Making up for some absolute shockers earlier in the game.
Lewington, I thought he had a terrible game.
He did, didn't he?
But
butchering a 5-on-1.
Oh, God. He butchered two tries because early on, I think it was a scrum or a line-out where Maitland loops around the corner. He's like in front of Maitland as he comes round. So he has to take the pass, almost turning back to his own try line.
Yeah, he's in, isn't he?
If he's behind Maitland and he takes out speed, there is no one near him. He butchered that. He butchered the 2-on-1, 3-on-1, 4-on-1, whatever it was. But then he basically wins the game by that break and pass to Jackson Ray. So all is forgiven.
Yeah. I also want to just say, I want to say well done to my BT Sport colleagues for roasting Ugo to an appropriate level.
I didn't see that.
I missed it.
There's plenty of little digs in commentary on the just because it was his first commentary game back proper.
Haters gonna hate.
Well, it was just good.
And Harlequins as well.
It was good. It was good banter. I also the one reason I really like the Saracens red kit is because it makes Vincent Cock look even more like Mr. Incredible.
He does look like Mr. Incredible.
Yeah. Very much so. Although friend of the pod, Ollie Poole, pointed out the shorts were a slightly different shade of the red to the shirt, which. Yeah. I hadn't noticed until he pointed it out.
No, and then once you've seen it.
You notice it every time.
Yeah. I didn't notice that, even when after it was pointed out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't remember seeing that earlier in the season, so I think maybe it's just they put the shorts on a hot wash, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, quite possible. Let's just talk about Saracens' debut players. I say debut, certainly debut in the Premiership. They brought on Ethan Lewis later on, but that's not the story. I like the look of this Theo McFarland.
The second row.
A young Saracens second row coming out of the blue. They just...
Just dual international. Just pick up this dual international here. Plays a bit of basketball. Although, the commentary team is making it out like, we've literally pulled this kid off a court. We're going to see if he's any good. You know, for run out at Saracens. Which wasn't quite what happened. I mean, he is an international for... Is it Tonga?
Samoa.
So, Saracens produce second rows like they're going out of fashion. And in the way that Wales produce sevens, like they're going out of fashion. Are there any other teams that have such a prolific record in one particular position?
I would say back in the day, although not anymore.
Georgia and props, obviously.
Well, Leicester Tigers in second rows were pretty good at it for a little while. They had the Deacons, at the same time they had Morton Johnson, and they had Ben Kay, who all came through the Leicester system.
Corey,
and maybe even Hamilton. Maybe Hamilton's a tiny bit later. But he definitely played. In fact, no, he did play with those boys.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
So, yeah, he had an awful lot of lads come through there at second row. But that's when he could just spend whatever he wanted and steal everyone else's kids.
maybe it's Wasps and Hookers.
Yes.
Although they dig into the championship for a few of them, so it's not like they're producing them themselves. But they find them.
But they also produce, like, Ogre and Barbary. Yep. At the moment.
Is Ogre a Wasps Academy lad?
Yes, he was.
Are you sure? No, how would he become a Wasps Academy? Because he was a Millfield School lad, and they usually end up in... Bath, which is why he got in trouble.
I think you can be recruited not just because of your school, but
because of where you live or somewhere.
Because of your address or so where you live.
Is this like...
There's quite a lot of Millfield get recruited to Millfield, don't they?
Yes, that's right. So is this a little bit like in Friday Night Lights when they... when they check the addresses of all the kids to make sure that they're
eligible. And one of them's an empty bit of land.
Yeah, that's what we're saying happens to Togri.
Yeah.
There's a P.O. box.
Have you ever watched Friday Night Lights, Phil?
I've never watched it.
So
no.
Good.
It is good, but you'll have to invest a lot of time in it over the 8 seasons that it was on.
Yeah, you do.
And given I mean, normally watch about 20 minutes of TV a week, it'll take a while.
It's a bit like, in the same way that Entourage, I think I enjoyed that more when I was younger than I would if I watched it fresh now.
Oh, I loved that. Watching it when you're kind of in your mid-20s or whatever it was.
Entourage was like Sex and the City for
blokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I say. Sex and City, Entourage is Sex and the City for blokes. And I'll go on further. WWE is musicals for blokes. They don't understand why we like it. We don't understand why they like musicals. It's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but Friday Night Lights is brilliant. And the one character when I was younger, when I first watched it, you know the one. The one character that you that's just a legend in that.
I've always wanted to be Ari Gold, but still.
In Entourage. Friday in Friday Night Lights.
Oh, Friday Night Lights. Who is it? Who is the legend in that?
Tim Riggins.
Oh, Tim Riggins. Ah, so I'm not. Yeah, I'm not.
Tim
that
Riggins. So he's. So he's in the first year of, like, the high school. So he's like he's when the show starts, he's meant to be 16, 17. He's just cleaning up with any woman he wants.
Yeah, and
he's having a beer first thing in the morning before he goes to school.
But
driving his pickup truck to school, yeah. and then he's dominating on a Friday night.
Yeah, awesome. But he's got a suspiciously low alcohol tolerance. So if someone who wakes up in the morning with a single can of beer, he gets absolutely wasted on a six pack of a 330 mil Coors Light.
So you're suggesting
wasted?
He just has one in the morning.
Yeah,
just to freshen him up.
And I'd love to know how the household economics work there, because pickup trucks are not cheap to run. And he lives with his brother, who is, what is his brother? It might be a mechanic, actually.
Maybe. Billy the mechanic, rings a bell.
Yeah, the other one which gets me on American shows is when they go drinking at rail yards. I'd love to find a rail yard that I could go like go drinking at.
Yeah.
Just pull up the car, get absolutely shit-faced, and then, you know.
The one that gets me on American shows is...
Watch your freight cars come in.
That always makes me annoyed is, like, the incredible spread of breakfast that is on in the morning when the family is sitting around.
Oh, yeah.
kid 17, comes down the stairs... There's pancakes, there's scrambled eggs, there's a big jug of orange
bacon,
juice, streaky
fresh
bacon,
fruit.
And what happens?
Just one slice of toast.
Has a bite.
Little gone. Corner bite, the tiniest little corner bite, and out the door.
Yeah. So irritating. What a waste.
Yeah. AJ McGinty's life up. That's how he grew up.
Yes. And that's one small sliver of positivity for Sale, by the way. Just looping back to that is AJ McGinty. Returning to the match day 23.
Yeah,
but he'll sort things out. But back to Saracens. That youngster. That's where we got started on. I don't know how we got onto that. But
I mean, amazingly, Saracens. I did not think they'd be good this year. I can't see how you can have a year off professional rugby and be this good. They are so good.
We're wrong.
Yeah, we're wrong.
Phil was right. You and I were wrong.
I just don't get it. I still don't get it. And they're one very close loss away from being undefeated, if it wasn't for Tigers.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Which arguably they should have won.
They are literally, they look like favourites for the league as things stand.
And they're missing quite a few players, albeit having a brace of Vunipolas or a hat trick of Vunipolas, because
Manu was on the bench.
Manu came on the bench.
But a brace of angry Vunipolas.
Yes, who wants
Billy
to prove a point.
I mean, I don't know how England think they're going to go without Billy to the next World Cup. He just is a different level to everyone else.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, are they changing his
team?
He
hasn't
over?
Been playing well, though, has he? He hasn't. The sort of hunger that he's got at the minute and the bit between his teeth and where he's running with a kind of anger.
That's an interesting question,
That makes him... He hasn't appeared to have that to that degree.
When's the last time we saw
Maybe Eddie's absolutely right. Maybe
Six Nations.
Yeah, Six Nations, I would say that's the Billy that we saw. Just not quite there.
Yeah.
Since he's come back to the Premiership, though, it's like...
Yeah. Which is
game time.
Which correlates with him missing out on the
England squads. Yeah, so maybe Eddie knows things.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe we'll touch on Eddie knowing things in the international pod.
Yes, correct.
Hmm.
But this probably a good point to segue across to the Leicester game, Leicester Saints, the East Midlands derby, because George Ford is another player who again, you're looking at the way he's playing, going, how can any international team not want him in their squad?
Yeah.
So I had to watch this again. I watched the first 10 minutes of it, and I couldn't quite concentrate. I thought, no, this is not a game that you watch when you're not concentrating. You need to put it down, come back and watch it in its full glory later on. I'm glad I did. Exceptional performance. And it goes back to what I said at the start of the podcast, which is when teams hammer other teams now, it's not because they're bad teams. Northampton are not a bad team, not even close to being a bad team. They're excellent. And Leicester Tigers absolutely pumped them.
They absolutely pumped them. And I was watching this late in the game. I was thinking, is there any facet of the game on this day, not in general, but on this day, that where Northampton got the better over Leicester?
There was one scrum at the start.
Yeah, maybe one, but overall in the scrum, no. Overall in the line out, no.
Breakdown,
no. Tactical kicking, no. Out
finishing,
wide,
no.
Well, let's talk about Steve Borthwick just for a second, right? Because two coaches at the moment are really bothering me, and another coach is really impressing me. So you know the coach which is impressing me, Steve Borthwick.
Borthos.
And the two coaches which are really bothering me are Rob Baxter at Exeter and Alex Sanderson at Sale. Who are obviously two high performers. The other coach who I'm massively into at the moment is Skivington. I think Skivington's doing a great job. The reason it bothers me is because, as I've said over and over and over again about Borthwick, and people still say this in the press, that he doesn't give a lot away. He gives everything away. He gives absolutely everything away. He has told me to my face, over Zoom, we work on breakdown, defence, and set piece. That's what he's. I don't know why.
And
people,
I've said before, I think what they mean. Yeah. I think what they mean is, and because I've been in a position where I'm about to interview Steve Borthwick before a game or after a game. He's there with his media guy.
Yeah.
And the media guy's got a load of prepared stuff, which they've obviously worked on in the week. Here's our messages. Here's what we're saying. Here's what we're thinking. Here's the bigger picture. The media guy might just remind him. We've got, for example, I think in one game, I'm sure the media guy probably said to him, because he was talking through this stuff and then Borthwick mentioned it, we've got 8 Academy graduates in our starting 23 today, or 9 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
My point being is Borthwick tells you, he gives you lots of detail and he tells you everything, but he tells you what he wants to tell you.
I
I'm not criticising that. I'm just saying I think that maybe some people might come away thinking he hasn't really addressed what I was talking about there, but he's absolutely got across what he wants to get across, as is his right and as he should.
I just think that I know exactly what I expect from the Tigers because the coach has told me. Now, the problem with, particularly last week when Exeter lost, Rob Baxter said that they mentally weren't ready for it. And I hear things like this from Alex Sanderson when Sale lose. I'll give you an example, a quote from the La Rochelle game, which was, we weren't emotionally ready for it, or emotionally we handled it wrong. Now, I'm not being funny. No amount of tears or laughter are going to be able to move Will Skelton. It's just not a thing which is a solution. And I get really worried when coaches use psychology when they're saying we weren't mentally ready for it, what they're actually saying is, I've got the solution, you just didn't work hard enough on that solution, give me more of that solution. Whereas when I listen to what Steve Borthwick says, it's a rugby solution to rugby problems. That's how he approaches things, and I think that's a far better way to do it.
Well,
I can have both, and I think actually both Baxter and Sanderson have both in abundance.
I know what you're saying, but there's a lot of tactics in the Leicester performance. There's a lot of exceptional execution of things that they've worked on in training, but fundamentally what's led Leicester to 8 wins from 8, is it 8 wins from 8 now? 7 wins
seven,
from 7,
seven eight from 8.
What's led Leicester to 100% record this season, many wins,
7
is
from 7,
is absolute brutality.
Yeah,
that is the basis, and I think that's what Rob Baxter was saying last week, is that they weren't nasty. Leicester are horrible.
They are horrible. But
I love it.
They can invest all of that. They're very lucky as well because they've got George Ford, right? So largely, and if a coach's ego doesn't get in the way, you can do this. You can say, well, go and do the attack, please. And that does work because talented players in the same team will score tries. Look at the Barbarians. You only need to put talented players in the same shirt and they'll score tries, but they won't defend well. Now, ironically, defence is where coaches find it easiest to influence a team, yet it's one of the things which teams don't do that naturally because they need to trust each other and so on and so forth. So by spending his time doing what he's doing, it's becoming enormously successful, and he can hand over the attack to George Ford, and it's that easy.
It's not that easy, actually, but
it's actually really hard, but that's what they've done.
I'm really interested to hear what Phil says. I'm just going to make one observation, difference between Leicester. Steve Borthwick's overhauled that squad fantastically. His recruitment has been exceptional. But when you look at just comparing and contrasting Leicester and Exeter at the minute, when Exeter are without Johnny Gray, Vermeulen, Kirsten, Ewers, Simmons,
Luke Cowan-Dickie,
the guys that are coming in,
Johnny Hill,
Johnny Hill as well. I mean, God, that's a wow.
Yeah,
some of the guys that are coming in are great. Some of them are not. Is a big drop off. I think what's been really impressive with Leicester is they've actually shed big names like Lavanini.
Yeah,
and
thank God,
Harry Wells and guys like that have just become indispensable.
I think they know what I mean. Harry Wells is a good example, isn't he? Because he's the sort of player that I think Exeter would have. I can't really see like Lavanini. To be honest, I couldn't see someone like what's his name, Nadolo being an Exeter player. Admittedly, he was once.
He was at one point.
Admittedly, he was once.
Perhaps, but that's the reason why he didn't make it.
Yeah, I just couldn't see that being a signing, and also I didn't think he'd be a very good signing. Turns out he's bloody brilliant for them.
He's pretty handy if you just create him a little bit of space.
He has been a revelation in my mind. We all knew he was good, but I thought he came. I honestly thought he came to Leicester for a retirement paycheck. That's what I thought. 33 years old or whatever he is.
He's coming
bigger
to
lad.
He's coming to win the league.
Well, if they win the league, that isn't the story. Richard Wigglesworth is the story.
Oh, Wigglesworth. Well, I was actually looking at the players that both Northampton and Leicester were losing. I actually think, obviously, Ben Young's not playing for Leicester arguably makes them stronger because Wigglesworth was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then Van Portfleet scores the charge down and intercept, scores two tries in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, the other one as well, who might be the best in his position in the entire league, is Montoya. I love Montoya.
He's quality.
Now, saying he's the best in the league might be a stretch because there's some bloody good players in the hooker position.
LCD and Creevy, Jamie George.
LCD, yeah. George. Yeah.
But he's up there. Like, you know, if you've got an elite five guys, you know, they'll all be slightly better at each other at different things, and they're all very good. But he is right in that mix.
Yeah. There's a couple of things. So, one is, it's interesting because obviously we want more information from the coaches. We want, exactly as you're saying, Jay, we want rugby solutions to rugby problems. If I was a coach, or if I was a, say, DOR or CEO, observing my head coach, I would not want him to give away what we're going to be doing in the press. Yeah. I would want him to be talking fluffy nonsense to distract people over here when we are focusing over here. In the same way that the All Blacks have had people sweeping the changing rooms and carrying luggage off coaches for years, thinking it's going to make them better.
The master of this is Alex Anderson. Absolutely. You try and ask him like what he's going to do rugby-wise. Yeah, not really that interesting. But he'll say about Brotherhood and walking up Snowden.
Yeah.
No problem. And the issue with it is the press love it. They can't get enough of it.
Yeah. But he's looking big, shiny thing over here. When actually we're going to focus on this.
Yeah, it's about love and brotherhood. And scribbling things down. Love and brotherhood. This is great. I just want to hear about lineouts, breakdowns, scrums, defence. That's what I want to hear.
I'd agree with everything you said on Leicester's signings. And probably more important than their signings have been their departures over the last few years. And you read the list, the 20-plus players that have left that club every season for the last...
Yeah.
Well, it's been before Borthwick, but... Before Borthwick, it was like not really planned out. Since Borthwick came in, it was pass or fail, you're in or you're out. You're out, you guys are in.
Well,
and getting the squad that he has got now, which the squad that they've got looks and you ace.
Yeah, it does. And you mentioned Nandolo a moment ago. He kind of does for Leicester the kind of job, slightly different, obviously, a different position, but he has the same effect that a fit Manu Tuilagi always did.
Yeah.
However, he's actually fit.
He plays.
Yeah, because he just sucks players in and creates space for others. And if there's not space for others, there's space for him, and he does what he does.
Yeah, I do think Leicester are going to... Actually, they might not struggle that much because it's Premiership Cup, isn't it? So they don't miss that many guys until... Are they in the European Cup? Are they in the Senior One?
I'm not sure.
I'll need to check that.
Yeah, presumably they made top seven, it would have been last year.
Yeah, they're in the European Cup.
Yeah, so I don't think they've got another round of Premiership games until after Europe, I think. I'll just have to check those fixtures, but certainly this is the end. This is the first of the one third of the way through, basically.
It is. I know Premiership can't decide fixtures like this, but it is a bit of a shame that this season, Quinns, Harlequins, and I think also Leicester, Northampton, the reverse fixtures are going to be during the Six Nations.
Yeah. Inside, what do they call it? Rugby Inside Line made this point, and I thought it was a really good point. Maybe we should look at protected fixtures. And I don't know how you quite do that, because, of course, one of the teams won't be playing. So you're going to have to say, you don't have a protected fixture, or maybe you do it on a different weekend or whatnot.
I wouldn't necessarily say protected fixtures, but to have two rounds of Leicester Northampton and Quinns Saracens, have both rounds without the Stars, when they are local derbies. They'll get the biggest turnout, and you want, where you get the biggest turnout at the ground, you want the best players playing.
Exactly.
To lose it in both home and away seems a bit ridiculous.
They know it's the protected game. You could move it to, I don't know.
You just move it 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later.
They just swap it around. But you can book out bigger stadiums. And also, I don't know if this is just me being wishful about the whole thing. It seems that a lot of Premiership grounds have started to fill up again. I don't know what the attendances are. But Kingsholm looked good. Northampton looked good. Harlequins was a sellout. So if you have the protected fixtures, you know, I'm pretty sure that Northampton's going to have sold a few more tickets if they move to, I don't know, wherever they can move to.
The Rico.
Where would they go to?
Where would Northampton go to?
Have they played some in the hockey stadium? Is that bigger?
I'm not sure.
No, I'm not sure either. But Leicester could always move it to, you know, where Leicester City play. There are various
King
options.
King Power Stadium, former Walkers.
Yeah. So, actually, just on that, who would the games be then?
The protected games.
If you had,
Bath Gloucester?
The ones that.
Or Bath Bristol?
Bath Bristol, I think I'd pick over Bath Gloucester these days.
Bath Gloucester, I think.
I'd probably go Bath Bristol.
Bath Bristol.
I'd be interested to hear what.
Bath Gloucester as well, to be honest.
Bath Gloucester's mega. I mean, they're so close to each other, but so are Bath and Bristol.
Yeah.
Interesting. Worcester?
No.
No, they have to set up. Okay.
Worcester geographically would be Gloucester. Or possibly even Wasps now, but then neither of those things are.
And they've got beef over the academy, so it's a bit manufactured, but still.
So, one fixture I noticed that I am going to do everything I can to be there at that game. And I think it's one of those ones I'd prefer not to work. Although I would absolutely... No, I would love to work it. London Irish is St. Patrick's Day game this season.
Is against
Harlequins.
Ooh, that is a good one.
That will be,
that'd be nice.
Absolutely huge.
Yeah, Quinns will be losing a few players because it'll be over Six Nations period.
Yeah.
Irish won't really be losing anyone.
No, because they're all from the Southern Hemisphere.
if we don't get to the Brentford Stadium by then, that is one to get to the Brentford Stadium for.
Probably
that,
not wrong,
that will be huge. So I'd go, Quinns Irish would be one. Quinns Saracens.
Yeah.
Leicester Northampton, obviously.
Yeah.
Bristol Bath, possibly Gloucester Bath.
Yeah.
And
surely Saracens Exeter. After Saracens salary cap breaches,
that's a good shout.
Cost Exeter two or more.
That's a good shout.
Because you also free up Harlequins to play London Irish then.
Yeah. Yeah, each club, you should only have each club with one protected fixture.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So we're pairing teams up. Okay, so if we're pairing them up, then it's Harlequins Irish.
Yeah.
Exeter Saracens.
Yeah. This is a wonderful game.
Bath Bristol.
Yeah.
It'll have to be Gloucester Worcester, Leicester Northampton, and then the King of the North, Sale, Newcastle.
Which, because there's 13 teams in the league, leaves Wasps.
These Wasps out. Well, they moved home.
So Nomads. And they're going to get paired with Ealing next year, assuming Ealing.
Yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Win this week.
I do love this game, yeah. Because, of course, you can do it two ways, won't you? You can either do who are the historic pairings, which is basically what we've done, except for one of them, which is Saracens and Exeter, and then you can sort of feed the hate to them, why they hate each other.
Yeah.
So you've got to really construct the reason why everyone should hate each other. And then and then they play. Brilliant.
So Exeter hate Saracens because salary cap cheats. Yeah. Saracens hate Exeter because they're racists.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, hold on. No, this is the one thing. Apparently. The people
that We've got to sell that message.
Yeah, you've got to sell the message.
Racist against cheats.
But then...
Premiership rugby.
Well, no,
on.
Actually, but, well, the very people that are claiming that of Exeter.
They were claiming it, though. This is a narrative to sell tickets.
Yeah, okay. We're selling tickets.
I'm not going that far.
But I am.
You don't
want to see the racists get beaten up. wait until you see the literature for Paddy Jackson.
Oh, God.
The very people that are saying that now about Exeter, when and if Exeter bend the knee, they'll go after Saracens next.
Oh yeah.
A Middle Eastern warrior.
But that's not our problem.
Wearing fez hats.
That's not our problem. We just need to build the most controversial flyers and promos, like US election campaigns with the serious music.
I'm just imagining now.
You don't want these
a promo for a game, and then JB popping up. I approve this message.
Yeah. You don't want these guys winning rugby games, do you? What message does this send to kids? Your kids.
No, Kevin supports Saracens this weekend. I want the other coaches. I want Mark McCall coming up at the end. I approve this message.
Perfect. I think we've nailed that.
Oh, we really have.
Paul Morgan, give me a call. I will do all the comms.
If we're in charge of marketing rugby.
Well, if only.
If only.
Exeter. So we've briefly touched on them before.
I loved this game as well.
This was a spicy, niggly game. From what I saw, I watched the whole game, but from what I saw of Gloucester, they basically wanted to do two things. They wanted to either kick the ball and let Exeter play, box kick it, let Exeter play, or try and manufacture some space for Louis Rees-Sammet.
Or maul it.
You're right. And fair play to them for turning down a few kicks at sticks, kickable, not easy kicks, but kickable penalties to go for the corner and take on the Chiefs at their own game. So yeah, they had three things. Box kick, maul it when they got close to the line, or try and manufacture some space for Louis Rees-Sammet. And they did it effectively with that a game plan that simple, and took on Exeter Chiefs at their own game and almost won.
I know. I like what they did. I like how organised they are. They know what they're good at. They know what they're not good at. I think Hastings has been a great signing because he just kicks everything. He reminds me of Owen Williams. He really does.
He's a handy player.
Yeah, good player. The maul is right. This is why I like what Skivington's doing. He's given them really good basics. Once you've got your basics, you've got something to hang your hat on. I think Gloucester were all at sea at the start of this season. Don't think they knew what they were. Well, they know what they are now.
Yeah,
that's why they're sitting at fifth. Singleton has come on leaps and bounds to the point that you watch lineups defend him versus Cicino, and they defend them different ways. So you'll see that they don't bother defending the tail of the line-out against Cicino, but they do against Singleton, and it opens up the rest of the line-out. So I think he's been really good. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if he's not that far away from England recognition.
Another call, because he's been in and around
the
squad.
He's in the World Cup squad.
Was he? Yeah.
He was the third hooker.
God.
Well, the boy could throw in. I'll give him that much. Really, really pragmatic, good coaching.
I really enjoyed seeing Exeter dig this one out.
Yeah.
And
I did as well.
And I know you're saying you love the detail. I actually love the emotion from players and coaches and stuff.
Yeah.
And I can dissect the detail another time. I am interested in it, but actually, in the heat of battle or and immediately afterwards, I want to hear the emotion. And I loved Rob Baxter's post-match chat, saying, we've come a long way and we've won trophies and stuff, but I never, ever want this, coming to King's Home and winning a game, not to feel very, very special. So in the chat we've just had, we haven't talked about the game at all. I just said, you know, massive well done. This is special. I love it. And it says everything about the Premiership as well, that it is a big deal for a team like Exeter still to go to King's Home and win.
Yeah. I think Exeter are losing primarily because everyone's really, really good, not because they've got really bad. But there is something to be said about these law variations and the latch. If you think about Exeter as a team, how many of their guys can stand up to and ride the first hit without the latch? Well, they can, but no more than anyone else. Whereas last year, everybody could. You've probably got Cowan Dickey, Don Armand, the other one, Ewers. Dave Ewers.
And Simmons.
Simmons that can ride the tackle. Everyone else was relying on latches. And do you know what? I think it's actually wrong that rugby have taken that away. I think it's ridiculous, actually, that you can have a team as successful as Exeter who have been hamstrung, not because of something the opposition have done, because something an administrator's done, because they want to see a different type of rugby.
And what was the reason, what was the justification for changing that?
Who knows, right? But if
presumably it was a safety thing, but I don't actually know.
But if the result is more players like Dave Ewers, it doesn't strike me as particularly safe. So Exeter could build a team of very big men who are organised and would latch. But now they're going to be looking for absolutely monstrous men who can ride the first tackle, because that's what they want. In fact, everyone's going to be looking for the same thing. It's a stupid thing to do, because it rewards bigger players, whereas before you could have fitter players who could do the latching.
I'm very much warm into the 50-22 law.
Definitely. That is a good law.
That opens things up. That tactically, do you drop players, do you not? The threat of the potential of what could be done, and if you're playing against Leicester, it doesn't matter, because George Ford will just do a 90-22.
That was unbelievable. Ridiculous. Astounding. Kick. Loved that kick.
Yeah.
But well, I'm still not convinced on the 50-22.
It's exciting though, isn't it?
The jury's out for me. Yeah. For one primary reason, which is it changes the incentive for turnover ball. So previously, turnover ball was the best ball to score a try from because the opposition defence is disorganised. Now, turnover ball, instead of running it, which
kick
is
it.
What. Yeah, kick it becomes the best option. So you're incentivising people not to attack, you're incentivising people to kick away the best attacking ball. So the jury's still out for me on
that. Well, only in your own half.
Yeah, true.
You know, you still have a half of where you can turn the ball over and go for it.
And Leicester have shown, because they've got George Ford, who's so good tactically at kicking, teams are dropping that player, but then they're in that quandary. And part of the reason we've been saying Ndolo's had a great season, I think he's the one player that's benefited from it more than any other.
Yeah.
I mean, I just hate,
because they've had a bit more space to get him into.
I just hate the law changes. I hate the constant law changes.
I'm all right with that one. Yeah. So I'm warming to that one. The latching one, I don't really see the point of it. I don't like the goal line dropout at all.
No, I don't. I think we should bring back 5 minute scrums.
Well, but it's a goal line dropout even for instead of a 22, and I hate that one.
Hang on, let's get this right. It's made so the 22 is obviously the safer option for the defence. Hang on, let me try to get this right. It's made it less safe and also more safe depending on which way.
Yes, exactly. It has kind of evened it out.
Now kicking the ball into the dead ball area is a really good lottery, potential attacking opportunity, but worst case scenario, it's going to get great ball back again.
When's the last time that you watched a full game of NFL? A full game, start to finish?
Oh. Super Bowl.
Phil?
Super Bowl about 3 years ago.
Okay. So we all kind of like NFL, and we all sort of know the rules.
Broadly. You guys know and like it more than I do.
Yes, I agree with that.
So I've played enough Madden to know the rules.
Oh, yeah. You've dabbled.
Absolutely.
You know your way around.
Yeah. You know your nickel from your...
From your dime.
From your diamond.
Yeah.
Dime.
Dime.
I was going to say diamond then, but...
Exactly. Steve Diamond.
You know your Andy Nickel from your Steve Diamond, right?
Exactly.
So, the point I'm trying to make is, like, imagine if you hadn't watched NFL for 5 years, or 3 years, or 2 years, and then you turn it on, and there's a whole new set of rules, and you go, what is this? You know, what has happened? The NFL does change its laws quite often. Nothing like rugby has. I mean, just imagine hamstringing one of your best teams because someone decided to. It's nuts.
So I was watching this game thinking, what has had the greater contribution to Exeter struggling in this particular game? Is it the Latch Law change, or is it the fact that they're missing, as you listed before, look, Karen Dickey, Johnny Hill, Johnny Gray, Yanis Kirsten, Jack Vermeulen, Dave Ewers, Sam Simmons?
That's seven massive men.
Who would be kind of at start, is the core of their starting pack. And, but not only is it the core of their starting pack, it is the guys who, JB, as you listed before, they are the guys who can get you over the gain line without the... They are the guys.
Yeah, but that just makes sense to like every other team then. And if you remember during COVID when they were trying to catch up with all the fixtures, we were saying the best team in the Premiership is Exeter's first team, and then it's a second team, and it might even be their third team on occasions. And there's a process that goes on at Exeter. Rob Baxter will sit down with all his coaches, and they'll plan years and years in advance. If they want to change a law as fundamental as the Latch Law, tell them they're going to do it in 5 years so they can change everything in their club and make sure they've got...
I hear that.
It's some nonsense. Or, you know, even 3 years. You can do a lot in 3 years.
I'd be happy with an amnesty on laws or an embargo on new laws.
I think it's necessary for a little while. Picking up just some of the emails I'm just having a look at as we go through. And Patrick Hall said, and, you know, hey, BT Sport, pay attention to this.
Read that email. I'll be there in 2 seconds.
Patrick Hall, contactedchasers@gmail.com. He said, hey, lads, I've played rugby since I was 8, but I've never watched a Premiership rugby match. But from listening to Egg Chasers, you got me so interested in Premiership and the storylines that I've bought my monthly pass, especially to watch Saracens versus Harlequins, and I've decided to support Bath this year. That's another story altogether. Yeah, unlucky. But it's crazy that the competition is so woefully marketed. Please continue to do what you do. Well, that's great to hear. I'm sure BT Sport are very happy to hear that one as well. And woefully marketed, I think that might be harsh, but maybe not fair. But what I would say is some of those rivalries this weekend are just so interesting and engaging, and these are the moments and these are the games and the matchups when you really can tell a story. And he used that word storylines.
I completely agree.
You can tell a story. There's 150 years of history in some of these games. It really matters.
I don't know what happens in the top 14 in France, but I suspect it's very similar to Premiership in terms of the storylines and whatnot. And they've embraced it, and look what's happened. So I really dislike the whole chat. You know, when you read the rugby press at the moment, it's all going to be about England. I just had all these great games. There's so many better stories in the Premiership than there is in the international game.
Well, that is a chicken and egg, though, isn't it? Because if there was sufficient interest, that the articles would reflect it, because they would get enough clicks to pay for the advertisers, to pay for the writers to...
Or alternatively, you get three lads in a basement who put out a podcast every week and it's phenomenally successful because you talk about the right things. So, you know, the market is there, as we've proven time and time again. And they've been doing the same thing for 30 years now, going in cycles for England. And, you know, they wonder why the Premiership isn't getting traction. Well, first of all, Premiership rugby needs to stop promoting itself far, far better. They're so apologetic. Oh, well, this is how it was before, and this is how it will be going forward. Or, yeah, we've always started the league without international players, or we always miss international players in the international window.
We better not celebrate a massive hit because someone might complain.
Yeah, they would. You know, they were... Oh, I won't go into that, actually. But the point is, you need to follow... Or you need to promote the stories in the Premiership more, because it's just so much more interesting. The week-in, week-out operations of a rugby club are so much more interesting than the whims of an international coach.
Before we finally move off for Gloucester-Exeter, did you see the centre partnership for Exeter for the last 15 minutes?
Yes, I did.
Why do they go with like...
Yes, I did.
Why do they go with a big man, little man combo?
It's a great question.
So we got to size up finally the Hendrickson Witten, who is bigger debate.
Who is what it look like?
It looked like exactly what it looked like previously, and also on paper.
I will say now I've seen it, because I did pay attention to this. I was surprised how big Ian Whitten is.
Ian Whitten is a big... He's prime Northern Irish beef.
Isn't he just?
He is a big, strong boy. He's always been a big, strong boy, though.
He has, but You see Tom Hendrickson, and you just...
Hendrickson maybe got a tiny waist or something and massive shoulders.
Well, yeah, he's also shorter.
He's not shorter! He's not shorter. He's massive.
I mean, he's considerably shorter than Ollie Devoto.
He's 6 foot exactly.
Obviously. He is shorter than Ian Whitten and Ollie Devoto.
Hendrickson looks better in a pair of shorts.
Definitely. Hendrickson is in tremendous shape. Ian Whitten is also in tremendous shape.
Oh, yeah, he is.
He's an older...
He's an elite athlete.
But Whitten is a bigger, stronger boy.
Do you want to know who other older centres who are in phenomenal shape, who are around Exeter but no longer play for him? Matt Jess is in phenomenal shape.
Not surprised to hear Matt Jess's...
Tom Johnson is in phenomenal shape.
Not surprised to hear that either. What do they do?
I think they're both personal trainers. I think Matt Jess might be doing coaching badges, actually.
Okay.
And I think he's travelling like a couple of hours to training, to train his team whilst he goes through his badges, I think. Yeah, both of them are in unbelievable...
I mean, I left an open goal there. I thought you were going to say CrossFit.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing CrossFit.
Oh, no, Tom Johnson doesn't do CrossFit, but he does appreciate the system.
Mm.
Yeah. I had an interesting conversation about CrossFit and relation to rugby training and the way that CrossFit's principle is just to redline all the time, to just be like crawling out of the box at the end of a session. Actually, that's one of the things that a lot of conditioning people have an issue with it now. It's like, no, you shouldn't always go to that level.
But you should, because I'm lazy. Like, if I can avoid it, I will. And that's where you need to be. That's where you need to be to get fit. If you're a guy, I suspect like a lot of these really top athletes are, who just love writing themselves off, then your fitness and strength coach is right to say, you don't do that every day, mate. You know, turn it down. But if you're lazy like me, mentally weak, that's exactly, you need to be doing that.
And JB and I were nowhere near, we were among the older players on the pitch yesterday, and I think we were an advert of CrossFit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Dominating.
Total domination. Wasn't fair.
What other games were there? Oh, Bath lost again, predictably.
When's enough enough?
So Wasps missed in 17 players. Now, Bath obviously had the red card from Mike Williams,
which massively hindered them.
Yeah.
Hugely. No, you can't underestimate that. I'm not...
Where are we now? We are at... Played 6, won and drawn.
It was a bad loss. It was a bad loss. But like that, that was a bad decision. Rightfully red carded. Jimmy Gopeth, hope he's okay soon.
I missed this. Yeah. I knew it was some stuff about Jimmy Gopeth. What happened? Tell me about it.
So Gopeth was bending over to jackal a rook.
Yeah,
and Williams comes in from a bit of a distance at force. And it was an awkward, weird one because it's a tough one because there's no real other angle that Williams can go to because it's only the head. If he comes in from the side, he doesn't hit Gopeth in the head, but it's a penalty. Gopeth's head, so his shoulders are below his hips, which is
illegal,
but never enforced.
Agreed. That was the bit
But he kind of binds or wraps his arm onto Gopeth's head, around his head, neck, chest area. And so I think it was Williams's, really, his chest hits Gopeth's head. Gopeth's knocks clean out. So Gopeth has given away 5 or 6 stone to someone like Mike Williams. So it looks awful. It's actually probably not that dissimilar to challenges that happen frequently.
There's an element of similarity between the New Zealand prop.
Yeah,
on Moriarty, where Moriarty's bent over at the waist.
Yeah.
The New Zealand player's completely bent over at the waist, and it's like, okay, well, Moriarty's running at me with his giant head first. Where
do you go?
Well, what do you want me to do?
And actually,
he compresses his spine at the base of the neck, and that's literally what you're meant to do.
Well, on that one, I thought it was harsh because we've seen that refereed by Premiership referees, that kind of incident, and they've basically taken the stance that if both players are bent at the waist, if the tackler is bent at the waist, there is nothing more that he can do. He can't do anything else. Therefore, it can't be a penalty. Yeah.
And when you add into the fact in that, and we'll get on the international pod, we'll get into that, the ricochet player to player, I thought he was hard done by. This one is more clean cut because you could argue Williams didn't need to do it at all.
Yeah, I mean which is worse. He arguably, if he doesn't do it, he gives away a penalty.
Yeah.
If he does it, he gives away a red card.
Yeah, and actually, and this it is one of those situations where, because as you say, Jimmy Gopeth was in an illegal position.
Technically, but never enforced.
And had Williams taken the decision on a Monday morning and had Bath lost, you can imagine Mike Williams would have got absolutely roasted.
Yeah, if he just stands and watches.
If he just stands and watches. What are you doing watching that player do that? It's hard.
There's other options to pull Gopeth towards him. But it's not effective.
They've kind of got rid of that rolling technique thing. Yeah.
You can roll around the body. You can't roll around the neck. So that is still a thing.
You can't crocodile roll.
No, you can't crocodile roll. They got rid of that because there was loads of knees and ankles that were getting blown out.
That's always been illegal because you can't deliberately go to the ground, and a crocodile roll is deliberately.
But that used to be done a lot.
It did,
And it would like kind of.
But it's been cracked down.
I mean, that was in the era when who was the Sam Jones. When judo became a massive thing in as a transferable skill from rugby, because people were doing that crocodile roll, and Sam Jones in an England camp got ended his career. By Marrow, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
I would not want to. Oh God!
I'll give it a go.
I would not want to.
I'd like to watch
roll
you
with Marrow.
Give it a go.
Yeah.
Just on the rucks at the moment, you know, the Sam Warburton theory on clearing rucks, as demonstrated on BT's Rugby Tonight back in the day.
Go on, you'll have to remind me. You
so,
told this before.
So, ball focused ruck is basically, as we'd call it, cock over ball. Get your cock over the ball, seal off, hold on, right? Fine. A threat focused ruck, you go over the ruck and you carry on driving and you hit them and you drive them off. Mm-hmm. Okay, everything sounds good now. A ruck where it's like game over, the guy's got his hands on the ball. Sam Warburton was saying, target here, which is, I'm pointing now to the back of my neck, where my neck sort of joins, like the top of the spine.
Top of the spine, yeah.
Because that's where the guy is.
In between the shoulder blades.
In between the shoulder blades. Hit that as hard as you possibly can. So, don't think I want to. Think I'd jackal once in that game.
But that's awkward because of the. You can only do that if someone's shoulders are lower than their hips. If the jackal's shoulders are, so that if they're in an illegal position in the first place, because if their shoulders are higher than their hips, you can only hit their well, their arms or their chest.
Yeah, and actually, a lot of these guys. I mean, we said Gopeth is in an illegal position. I didn't see it, but you look at Moriarty. I mean, that's borderline legal. His back is nice and flat. His head is sort of neutral. You can't go under him because he's so close to the player.
The Moriarty one, he was carrying the ball.
Oh,
it's not,
sorry.
It's not a.
Yeah, it was a tackle.
It wasn't a ruck.
What was it not?
No. Moriarty's carrying the ball. He gets hit by.
He gets hit by Blackadder
from one side,
or
which
Papili.
Sorry,
but that was a no arm hit.
Hang on, but am I? Yeah. So sorry, I'm thinking the wrong incident here. The one against Moriarty was two guys coming in.
Yeah.
And I thought that was two red cards.
So it was one. The first one, it was definitely a no arm tackle, but he doesn't hit me in the head. So that should have been a penalty there.
Yeah.
The second one is, I think he was hard done by, partly because he was bent at the waist, which has been mitigation, certainly from Premiership referees, but also because of the ricochet. And like Moriarty is, it's like he's popped his shoulder and or ribs from the first illegal hit. So he's like going...
And there was no arms in either of them.
There may have been some in the second.
I don't think there was any arms in either of them.
Wasn't in the first.
Yeah,
no arms. They were
very fortunate to have one yellow card where there could have been two reds.
Anyway, back to we've talked far too much about internationals.
Back
to Bath Wasps. The two moments of the match were the Glanville try, which was awesome, and the Ogre try, which was awesome for Ogre.
Yeah.
Awful defending from Bath for him to just stroll through the middle from 20 yards out.
Yeah, it was. Just, I tell you what
one Rockadaguni's finish.
Yeah,
was pretty special.
It was all good. I don't think we need to say any more than we've said in previous weeks about Bath.
No, I think I can't add anything more.
So they've Ed Griffiths has been appointed.
Yes,
what?
That's right.
What? This is not small news.
Former Saracens CEO has come in.
Yes.
Do
you know who his brother is?
Hugh Griffiths, the newsreader.
Not Clive Griffiths.
His brother, Kai. Now, his brother was the head of NFL outside of the USA. So all of Europe, all of basically, well...
The rest of the world.
UK, Germany and...
Yeah. So...
They're the main two.
Netherlands.
I believe his name's Pete. These two are, some of the foremost sports minds in basically... all of sport. Like, they've got experience in cricket, NFL, obviously rugby... So he's been appointed as what exactly?
I think he's coming as a consultant short term with, it's obviously not a director of rugby rule, but straightening out the rugby side of things.
Administrative.
I tell you what.
Sorting out the management and coaches, I guess.
That is exciting. That is more than a bit exciting. So if you're a Bath fan, you should be that. I can't believe I missed that. That's one of the most important appointments that I've heard in years.
Last week, I think.
And he's a guy that can come in and, I mean, it's one of those where I imagine all of the coaching and all of the behind-the-scenes staff at Bath are getting a bit twitchy because he's going to be the one looking and really digging into what's going on there. He'll be doing an audit of what's happening from a coaching perspective.
Performance audit.
But he will be able to identify ways to turn things around in the short term, which is what he's there to do, I think.
Hey, Sippers, do you like land?
Well, it's interesting because when Saracens, in between their first penalty and second penalty for the salary cap breaches, he got brought in, didn't he, try and see if he could rectify things. And that's where a few players, was it Liam Williams left and probably one or two others where they were trying to jettison players to get under the salary cap for
so they
the
didn't...
2018-19 season.
Yeah, what was the reason for that? It was because of...
Was
it because they had an 18 point? Yeah, it's because they had one punishment and they could potentially survive it.
Yeah, they had a 35 point penalty.
Which they would have done.
Yeah.
Which they actually would have done at the end.
Would have done until they got the 100 odd point.
But then when they started digging into that season's accounts, it became clear that they were going to be over that season.
Do you remember all that? That just looked wrong. It was like, oh God, Saracen's doing really well.
More points?
Give them more points.
Nothing
How
like
many
process.
Is enough? We'll put them to minus 100. No one could escape from there.
What's the most points ever been scored in the Premiership? Find them that, because I think they might beat it.
It was that.
Yeah, so anyway, so rumour Worcester might end up with Steve Diamond, and Bath have got
Griffiths. Fair play. I mean, there's not many other men that I would choose above Steve Diamond. I'm not sure I would choose Ed Griffiths above him, but... It's a bloody good signing. It's a really exciting signing.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah,
we've got an email here. It's been sent to us among some other rugby savants.
Yeah,
so
a weird one, and I'm sure that some of those people on there don't want me knowing their emails and also their job titles. But I've got them now, so they'll be getting calls.
Thanks, Aaron, for the email, dear Tim. He's called you John and Phil.
J-O-N.
Question for the pod. To what extent are TMO reviews being influenced by in-game commentary in televised Premiership games? And what impact does this have?
I have no idea.
As far as I'm aware, none.
Well, okay, so...
I don't believe they can hear commentary.
That's exactly my point.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exactly what I think. Like, if they're hearing comms, then yeah. I don't know they do.
I would be astonished if they heard TV commentary. If they are, I would want to stop it immediately because... If they are, it would have an influence. It can't not have an influence.
They won't be. He references this because in the Northampton-Leicester game, Austin Healey made a couple of observations whilst commentating on the game. And after both observations were made, the TMO immediately informed the referee there needed to be a check for foul play. I would suggest that's just great minds thinking alike. There's no way they're seeing the commentary. The one thing potentially... there might be a case for, although I also don't think this is an issue, is the fact that the director of the broadcaster will influence the replays that are shown, and I think they must get a match feed
as well as having other angles.
So as we've seen with games in France,
yes,
some curious absence of replays at certain angles at certain moments.
Yeah,
as it should be.
For most of the game you get 10 different angles of the pitch. For certain controversial incidents from the home team, you get one angle from a very long way away.
It's very much like the Jeffrey Epstein cameras.
They go missing just at the right time.
We don't have that.
I agree.
Nice angle.
It would affect the integrity of the game. Were commentary to, but I'm absolutely certain that that is not the case.
Yeah, but you're right. I think they will have a TV feed, so there probably is some influence from the director, albeit they should get access to all of the angles. The TMO should be able to access all of the angles.
But these TMOs have every different angle. They can see it all. They've got someone there getting them every bit in real time. So if there's something to see, the commentator will see it and the TMO will see it.
Mm.
You'd have to sort of show that there's any issue, you'd have to demonstrate lots and lots of examples where a TMO missed something that commentary team also missed, and there's not many of them.
Yeah, or I just can't see it being done because it would unduly influence.
I'm open to saving some money and just letting Austin Healey be TMO. Just double up. I mean, I don't think he needs the extra money as a TMO fee, and he's already spotted it. He's got all the angles.
Yeah,
perfect.
Another email on domestic matters from Jim Crick, who just wanted to fill us in on a trip to La Défense Arena.
Oh, I love this email.
He saw
really enjoyed
Racing
it.
V Montpellier, and after hearing you guys talk about it, he thought, "See the influence we're having. We're getting people to sign up to watch domestic rugby because we sound so passionate."
Exactly. But
when Jim had a weekend away in Paris, he'd heard us talk about La Défense Arena and said, "I better go there then."
He's not wrong.
He said the day before the match, he got sent the following email telling me the schedule for the day, and safe to say it got us very excited. 3:30 p.m. doors open. 4:40 p.m. giant quiz with Fitbit connected bracelets to be won. 4:55 p.m. musical show with the group Your Dream Band.
Yes!
5 p.m. kickoff. Half time throwing the Natixis mini balls. 6:40 p.m. end of the match / third half on the lawn in the bodega with the musical show.
Yeah, there awesome. We go.
10 p.m. close.
Awesome.
So you get
hours of entertainment.
You get hours of entertainment. He said his girlfriend's American and her only live experience of rugby to date has been the Hong Kong Sevens, which is not a bad
If you're gonna do one,
is this what it's always like?
Yeah. So I was keen to show her the real spectacle of 15 aside. La Défense did not disappoint. Disco lights, full brass band, ample beer, an amazing atmosphere. And that was even before the game started. The game was exciting enough. Plenty of stars she recognised with watching Six Nations and Lions with me, including the Springboks, who were also in attendance, assuming they were training. Oh, the Springbok squad were watching.
Yeah, because they were...
They were watching Corbis Reinach and Andre Pollard.
Yeah, why were they there again?
I think they had a camp.
Yeah.
Camp there. She also recognised, quote, that guy with the humongous neck. Camille Chat. Home team didn't get the result, but you wouldn't have known by watching the crowd. Full stadium of French fans being very French fanny. The cherry on top was that as soon as the final whistle went, a full team of people rolled on kegs and makeshift concession stands and prepared for the on-field party. Live band went on through the night non-stop, and a great time was had by everyone.
Awesome.
Sounds ex. Almost makes me want to rejoin the EU.
Yeah.
It almost just makes me... I could probably tolerate a few days in Paris just to do that.
Yeah.
Although I'd rather fly in, fly out of Paris.
Yeah. I'm not a massive Paris fan, unfortunately.
I'm not.
Yeah.
Paris is great just to people watch.
Yeah.
Sit in one of those cafes where you have the heat lamps and the chairs facing out.
Outwards.
So you can just sit with a bottle of red wine and watch people walking by.
So on the match entertainment you mentioned there, I don't know who that band was. I don't know why it's just brought back memories. I went to watch the Super League Grand Final one year. It was Leeds who won against someone else. I can't remember who.
Yeah, I've been to a few.
At Old Trafford or Wembley?
Would you like to, I've only been to Old Trafford.
Would you like to guess who the half-time entertainment was?
What year are we talking, roughly?
Well, Rhinos... I'm going to say it was Rhinos Saints. So that could be any year, really.
Yeah. Doesn't
I'm guessing...
Like, not the mid-90s, then.
Nearly a decade ago, I'd say.
So about 2010.
What about Gareth Gates?
That's not a bad shout, but no. I can't even think what these... I can't tell you... I know the name, but I can't even tell you one of their songs.
Is it a group?
It is a group.
M People.
No, it's not
M People. What about... Five.
Oh, if it was Five, that would be awesome.
What about... He was big about 10 years
ago. Atomic Kitten.
So let's see if they're still going.
Okay, what, can you give us a genre
of
music?
So I'm on their Wikipedia now. They're alternative indie. So there you are. Timmy.
Okay, Shed 7.
Okay, indie pop rock. Indie 2005 till present.
Oh, okay.
The Enemy.
Nope.
Klaxons.
The Twang.
To date... Someone have achieved 8 top 40 singles and sold over 2 million records.
Okay. Top 40 2005. Singles. The Feeling.
That's not far from it, mate.
Pigeon Detectives.
Scouting for Girls.
Yes!
Was it? Was it?
Scouting for Girls. I thought this is so Super League.
Amazing.
Not quite the halftime show, is it?
Not the, the Super Bowl.
How did you get Scouting for Girls? That's amazing.
I don't know. Well,
you're a DJ.
I do occasionally play Scouting for Girls on Virgin Radio. Very occasionally, I'm glad to say. By the way, great ratings this week for
is that right?
The Mighty Virgin Radio and for yours truly. Thanks
amazing.
For having
it, obviously. Good work, Cocker. We've missed a game.
London Irish
against Brizzle.
Don't talk about it.
I hate London Irish.
Don't want to talk about it.
I hate them so much.
Why do you hate London Irish?
Because they shouldn't do this. How do they go from that great win away at Sandy Park? I know how it happens because their players are good. They can score points when they just play how they want to play. And I don't think the coaching is any good whatsoever. That's what I think. And they should have taken Bristol. At one point, Bristol had 12 players on the field. 12 players. And they still didn't win. It's remarkable.
But fair play to Bristol, on the other hand, for turning it around. And Irish are a...
And scoring some phenomenal tries. Some very bristly tries.
Some lovely tries. The one early on where they break out of their own 22.
Yeah.
And score was awesome. Was that the Fricker try?
Fricker had a nice one. The outside centre, who I don't know.
Bates.
That's the boy.
Yeah, he finished a nice one.
Nice one. What goes on at London Irish? What goes on?
They were celebrating after that win against Exeter. First win in however many games, 10 Premiership games. Probably until middle of last week. And then didn't really have time to train.
It's a tale as old as time. London Irish, winning games they shouldn't win and losing games they probably should win.
They are on
and,
the...
Yo-yoing from outstanding to average.
They make me bristle. They have cost me so much money. not only that, they're not far off from being a really good team. So, actually, as it stands, I've got the second least wins in the Premiership. So
Fewest,
thank you.
Yeah.
Bath, obviously, Bath are there with them. Zero.
Bath, zero. London Irish, one. Bristol, Worcester, Sale, two.
But
wins.
They've got two draws.
Mm.
And they should have won this.
And they've got
they
six,
should be. They
six
should
bonus,
be on four wins.
They've got six bonus points as well. They got the joint most bonus points combining, obviously.
So they just don't care.
And
like they
four
just,
tries.
They don't care. They want to score a few tries, go on the beers, and that's it. They'll show up when they want to. I don't know what goes on there. It's a frustrating club, to put it mildly.
Well, try being a fan or a pseudo fan like Cocker.
Yeah.
Fun though.
It is fun.
It's cool. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you could attribute that moniker to Bristol as well. At the moment, you never know what's going to happen. Scored some amazing tries, look great at times.
I've got a theory about London Irish, and it's not that revolutionary. You probably know this anyway. But my theory is this team was built for one reason and one reason only: not to get relegated.
Yes.
And now there's no relegation. They're not that bothered. Like they'll throw it about a bit. Sometimes they'll play. Sometimes they won't.
They let a couple of the older guys go, didn't they? Maafu, tight prop.
Probably want a Tim pay cut, to be fair.
And someone else would let go. They've done that. They've brought in a few of the younger lads, like the back three, like Goodridge, Clark, like Rogerson, who has played well. They're bringing in Donnell.
Donnell's very good.
The games, yeah.
Well, it's obvious what's happened here, which is they bring in this team not to get relegated, and they know they've got a great academy, and these guys are starting to come through. Stokes was playing this week. Parton, Hassel Collins. They've got loads of them. They've got absolutely loads of them. And they're bringing those guys through. I don't think London Irish will ever have problems developing players from the academy because they've got such a great catchment area and they're very good at that.
Mm.
But now there's no relegation. I just kind of think this team was ready for one thing. They're playing something completely different. But they should be winning more. They shouldn't. They should be on four wins.
I said Maafu. I didn't mean Maafu. I meant Sokopi Kepu. Not Maafu.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
who would have been a big salary as a many times capped Australian international. 110.
Yes,
110.
Capped Australian international.
I mean, my pre-season predictions are in tatters, but London Irish have made sure yours are just in
Well, they're on the verge.
All over the shop.
Because people are still beating everyone. Because everyone's beating everyone else. Who do they have? Well, it's in that bowl, isn't it? So there's no hiding.
It's also on a podcast.
Yeah.
London Irish are. They're only six points off top four as things currently stand.
How far are Sale off? Because they've only got.
They are one point better. 7 points off top four.
Oh, God, you're right. Everyone beating everyone.
Everyone's beating everyone else. Yeah. So Tigers and Saracens are not out of sight, but they're doing very well.
So Tigers have also played 7 games. So they are 8 points clear at the top. Saracens have only played 6, but they've won 5. They're on 24. Then Quins on 22. Northampton 20, and then Chiefs 19. Gloucester 18. Wasps 15. Irish 14. Newcastle, okay. Sale 13. Okay. Worcester 12. Bristol 9. And Bath 6 points adrift with only 3 losing bonus points.
Wow.
So I said, what did I say? I said Sale,
Irish, Exeter.
Definitely Exeter.
And Bristol?
I would have said Bristol. I'm thinking Leicester, but no. Because I've been raving about Leicester for bloody ages, but maybe, yeah.
I think I said Bristol. I think I said Exeter, Sale, Bristol. Maybe it might have been Leicester fourth. I don't know. I can't remember.
So I definitely said Exeter, Bristol, Saracens and Quins were my top four.
That's looking pretty good at the minute.
Apart from Bristol, who are second bottom.
Oh, yes, correct.
Apart from Bristol...
But oh, God, yeah, it gets worse for me, because if I had Bristol in there, it's not Sale and London Irish I need to worry about. It's bloody Bristol.
Do you know what? It's people don't tune in for our... expertise. It's the as we keep hearing, it's the passion and the interest and the product itself. How the dreadful predictions we have had this season is that's marketing right there.
Yeah,
just shows how good the product is.
Exactly.
Yes,
my predictions this week were all over the show. I lost I thought Gloucester would win.
Yeah,
they didn't. I thought Irish would win. I mean, that's a farce. What Irish did? They didn't. And
presumably you back Sale.
I of course I back Sale.
So
yeah.
Sale was the only. On my bets this week, Sale was the only one that I got wrong.
The bookies were very happy with rugby this weekend.
They cost us a lot of money.
That is for sure. just interesting, Michael Jenrick got in touch. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. We had quite a few American listeners enjoy the reference of Barstool Sports last week.
Oh, yeah, I noticed
which
that.
Which is a huge deal in America. And just suggested, giving us a couple of avenues on ways we might be able to hook up with them. With a podcast or two on the Barstool Sports Network.
We had someone contact us about doing a joint podcast in the way we used to do with Green and Gold for someone, but I can't remember who it was.
Yeah, that's this one here.
Is it? Okay, cool.
Yeah. Anyway, hi to Michael Jenrick, who lives in Denver, Colorado, and is proud to be part of the 10% of our weekly listeners from America.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
He's very much got into it, loves his rugby. And clearly, yeah, from your email, clearly you are a very big fan and of rugby, and I appreciate that. And keep fighting the good fight over there in the States. He says Denver, Colorado is home to some strong drinks at distilleries, major breweries, and amazing views. You're always welcome in our home if you're over, and we can drive you out to watch some Major League Rugby in Utah or Vegas.
In.
One day I hope to make it to a live podcast. College friends of ours are planning a trip for the World Cup in France.
Don't go to Marseille.
Don't go to Marseille. Avoid Marseille.
Anywhere but Marseille.
Let's hope we win that bid in the future and have it stateside. Don't worry, we can find some drinks just as strong as Strong Zero. Yes.
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
That's not a sales pitch. Yeah, there are drinks that are technically as strong as Strong Zero, but they'll never have the potency of Strong Zero.
thank you very much. I appreciate that. Denver, Colorado is going to be a particularly cool place.
So last few games to round up from me. Yep. You'll be aware that Sedgley Park won this week, Phil.
Yes.
Again.
Lugtonians.
Yeah, they hammered them, didn't they?
Yeah, from what I read, bit of a stop-start performance. I think they're considerably better. But
was it like 50 points?
I think it's like 38 or 39.
Sedgley Park
7.
Looking good in National 1.
Yeah.
Mm.
Blackburn beat Macclesfield. Now, if you're a Northwest rugby guy, when did this start happening?
That is quite remarkable,
isn't
actually.
It?
How far have one team climbed and how far have another team fallen?
Yeah, that's
the question.
I was astonished when I saw that result, but more power to them. And here's one for you. Colney went down to Plymouth and turn them over.
I saw.
That's another unbelievable result. Yep. City for Colby.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I've been following the progress of Plymouth. I'm quite excited about them. They can't be losing to Colney. What on earth? Nothing wrong with Colney, of course. Great team.
And Ealing beat London Scottish
105 to something.
105 to top five bottom. Or seven.
So I tell you what, looking at the tables this week, there are, I mean, it doesn't matter what level of rugby you are looking at, there are some horrendous mismatches. You look at some of the scores and it reads literally like a third team beatdown. Like, we didn't score as many points against Manchester as some of, I think Otley, was it? Did you just say Otley then?
No, I didn't.
I've got a feeling Otley had an absolute hiding.
Was Otley the, what was
this weekend?
I thought Otley was one of the teams that had to close down, was it?
I'm pretty sure.
Go back in and start again.
Oral.
Oral went back down, that's right. And Wakefield, wasn't it, was one of them?
Wakefield was one. Richmond.
Richmond had a good win.
London Scottish.
Oh, yeah, Richmond, I didn't realise this. Richmond are second.
Mm.
You kept that quiet.
That's because I don't want to give my brother too much props. He's one of the coaches, so...
That's not bad for what they do and, you know, how they're organised. So Richmond have...
It's a great... That rag ground is absolutely awesome. It's such a good place to watch rugby.
Yeah, I was having a little natter with a friend of mine on Friday. You know Richmond are second? Like, no, they're not. No, they're not. Yeah, they are. That's a phenomenal effort. If Richmond go up rather than Ealing, now we've got a problem. Mm. Right, predictions for next week. Let's start with Otley.
It's Premiership Cup.
Oh, no!
So are we doing it?
No, we're not. Okay. No, we're not. Let's just wrap this up.
Some kids will beat some other kids.
Yes.
And some kids we'll never see again. Yes. And that'll be that.
And we will do some predictions for the internationals in our next podcast.
God damn it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
On that happy, cheery note, let the boys play.
Awesome.